This is an audio archive of the CrossFit Live webcast from October 2nd, 2005. The following is the complete program featuring strength coach Dan John on the subject of strength training. For easier file download and management, this program is also available in two segments. Please see the archive page of CrossFitLive.com to download these segments separately.
It's the voice of elite fitness, CrossFit Live. Now, your host, Dave Young.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another edition of CrossFit Live. This time, we're going to talk about good old-fashioned lifting and throwing. Nothing terribly fancy here tonight, but some pretty important stuff nonetheless. Nobody better to speak about it than our guest for this evening, Dan John, strength coach and head track and field coach at Juan Diego High School in Draper, Utah. Now, Dan is somebody that's been at this lifting and throwing thing for a while, managed to amass himself a fair amount of experience and wisdom that he's going to share with you all in the minutes to come, so I hope you'll stick around for all of it. I'll let Dan introduce himself to you in just a moment. So now, let's bring in our guest, the man with two first names, Dan John. Dan, thanks for spending some time with us tonight.
Oh, you bet. I'm glad to be here tonight. It's going to be great.
Well, why don't we start by you telling us exactly where you are tonight, where you're talking to us from.
Sure. I'm in a chair, and the chair is in a room, and the room is in my house, and it's in lovely Murray, Utah, which is about 10 miles south of Salt Lake City. It's a little suburb, and in my house, we have 6 bedrooms. I have 2 daughters, my wife. I have a female dog, a female cat, so I'm the only male here.
Yikes!
But we bring the testosterone level up almost every day. I have a bunch of people come by and train with me today. We had, I can't always tell you who comes and trains, but today's a bunch of athletes who will represent us in international competition, and we worked hard and had a good time, and it was an interesting day, so it was a lot of fun. And I have a smallish gym here at the house. I have a thick bar, a standard Olympic bar, a female Olympic bar, kind of a crappy Olympic bar, a bunch of bumpers, rocks, a sled, farmer bar, a thick farmer bars, every throwing implement in both the Olympics and Highland Games. I got a volleyball net, got about a couple dozen medicine balls, shots, chains, you name it. We've got it. And that's the home gym, and of course where I work is the finest facility in America.
Well, listen, I want to talk to you about all of that, as a matter of fact, during the course of the night. So
right.
We'll get around to each and every bit of it as time goes on. First, I want to remind you and then everybody, of course, that these CrossFit Live editions live on in perpetuity in archive form, and people download them as time goes by and they listen to them, people that didn't get them the first time around. That undoubtedly is going to mean that there's a lot of people that are probably ultimately going to download this event and listen to it that might not be as familiar with you as some of us in the CrossFit community. So what I'd like to start with is you just kind of giving us a couple of minutes on your background, things like where you came from, how you got where you are, what you know, and why you know it.
Well, I'm from South San Francisco. I was born in 1957, and I'm the youngest of 6 kids, and there's 5 boys and a girl. And we're from a very, very athletic family. I think some of the CrossFitters will know my brother Gary from his post. Extremely athletic family. In fact, it's funny because people always consider me kind of a bad athlete. You know, here I am, this Division I discus thrower, MVP of a Division I track team, national champion, a bunch of things. And I've always been considered the bad athlete in the family, had a cousin who was the NFL Defensive Player of the Year for the Minnesota Vikings, Keith Millard. So we come from a family that, athletic standards in the McCloskey and John clan are right off. I mean, they are right off. Normal is really good, my family.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was young, I had an aunt die. This is kind of a funny little story. My aunt died, and she left some money, not a large amount, and my brothers purchased a weightlifting bar. A very cheap 110-pound set. And, I got my start with the 110-pound set, probably like everybody else when we were growing up back in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, Strength and Health magazine, Bob right. Benarski. The strong. It didn't matter what you did unless you clean and pressed it. So everyone clean and pressed. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because we're all pretty good athletes doing that. Oh, I guess when I was about eighth grade, I decided I wanted to play in the National Football League, and I started lifting weights pretty regular, about 2 or 3 days a week, in a kind of a sloppy little program. And then by the time I got to the ninth grade, I saved up money for almost a whole year. In fact, they used to tease me mercilessly about being such a miser, but I was saving enough to buy a weightlifting bench, and I got an adjustable weightlifting bench in ninth grade, and I started doing a real simple program. It's called the Southwood program. You do a set of eight, a set of six, a set of four, and you move on to the next exercise. And as a freshman, I weighed 118 pounds at middle linebacker, and I was undersized, as you can imagine. And I wasn't great, but I played hard. And then I played soccer, and then I wanted to go out for track. But everyone in my family runs, but I wanted to play football, so I picked up the discus my freshman year. I hurdled, did the discus, and I ran like the 400 or something like that, 440. And I learned that I could win by throwing the discus with the turn. Everybody else did a standing throw. So I went from 60 feet my first 2 weeks to 72 in my first meet to 89-10 in my first real win, and then I got over 100 feet. And by the time the season was ended, I was still small, but I was winning weight events. So through high school, I played football, basically. I wrestled. I played some soccer. You know, I played some, you know, church basketball, which is, you know, one step from murder. And I just kept getting better in the discus. My senior year, it became kind of obvious that, you know, I was about 162 pounds, and I played a position, and we called it corner, you know, which was kind of a hybrid defensive end, outside linebacker thing, and kind of a strong safety month, you know, like three things at once position. Mm-hmm. And I realized that there was not a lot of Division I schools wanted a slow white defensive back who couldn't jump, you know, which I've always amazed at. And I was going to go to San Francisco State. On the last day of school, the coach from Skyline College, Bob Lahotti, came by and said, why don't you come throw here at, you know, Skyline College for 2 years and go to someplace else? And I thought, all right, because no one had shown any interest in me at all. I weighed 162 pounds. I threw a discus 170, which is a great throw, but no one, it's puberty roulette, so everyone just looks at, you know, mm-hmm. if I didn't have a beard until I was 50, you know. So I went to Skyline, and I discovered Olympic lifting. Dick Knottmeyer taught me how to do the snatch and the clean and jerk, and boy, I tell you, you know, you take a 162-pound kid, teach him the snatch and clean and jerk, 4 months later, you have a 202-pound kid.
Right.
All in the traps, lower back and legs. I mean, I remember going to parties with my high school friends, and I remember a girl one time poking my traps, saying, "What the hell are those?" And you know, you take that good athlete who's undersized, hasn't hit puberty yet. You know, you pour 40 pounds on him.
Right.
Get him in the Olympic lifts.
Right.
You know, I was the only freshman at the state meet, and of course, you know, our sophomore year, we won it, and you know, we're a pretty solid program. And then I got my Division I scholarship to Utah State University, where with Ralph Mon, whose health, by the way, is terrible right now. And I went off and threw there. Since that time, you know, I've stayed in touch with the throws. I still compete. I still beat most college kids. In fact, it's rare for me to lose to a collegiate athlete in the discus. I can compete with many in the shot and hammer, and I'm 48. It is fun for me to say, what year were you born?
Mm-hmm.
And they say 87 or 88. You know, I was. You know,
yeah, you still got items in your daytimer from that. Yeah,
that's right. I have stuff in my teeth from then. And I still Olympic lift. We have a state meet coming up. I can't make it because I'll be giving a workshop, and I still do the Highland Games. I like this event called the Weight Pentathlon, where you throw the shot, discus, hammer, javelin, and the 35-pound weight. You know, I like to compete. I enjoy it. I hope people don't think of me as a jerk. You know, it's funny because everyone thinks I'm hyper-competitive, but at the same time, they think I'm a really nice guy. So as long as I keep a foot on both boats,
yeah, as long as you get those two things mentioned in the same from the same person.
Yeah, you know, the problem with those two boats, though, they don't always stay in the same, you know, they start, get in the ocean, I'm going to rip something. So so that's kind of who I am. I have some, you know, I've got some good lifetime marks. I've got some, you know, great, you know, great lifts, some championships. I certainly have duked it out with some of the best and, you know, certainly won a lot of times. And I really, I've also think, though, at the same time, I've really made a difference in people's life as a coach. You know, that's very important to me.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about what your life is like today as we go along tonight. I'd like to ask you how important you think, how big of a pivotal moment was it when that coach at Skyline College taught you the Olympic lifts? Do you think you would have ended up there anyway, or was that a real moment?
Well, it wasn't so much, Coach Lahati was very good, but it was Dick Notmeyer. It was about September, October of my freshman year, and they were trying to teach us the Olympic lifts at Skyline College, and one of the guys there said, you ought to go to this Olympic lifting meet at this place called the Sports Palace in San Francisco. So I jumped on my motorcycle Saturday morning. I was sitting there, and they announced the scorekeeper as Joy Notmeyer and the head referee, and he waved, as Dick Notmeyer. And it's funny how your brain will flash to something.
Yeah.
And I can remember seeing Dick Notmeyer's name on these junior Olympic lifting meets for all those years, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, literally, I kind of followed him into the locker room when he had to go to the bathroom, which probably sounds weird to your readers, or to the listeners tonight. But I said, hi, and he goes, well, yeah, you can come train with me anytime. He was like a mile and a half, 2 miles from Skyline College. He goes, I got to tell you right now, I do charge a membership fee. And I go, and I thought, oh, God, you know, I mean, I make $3 a week.
He goes,
I charge 25 cents a week. And that's just something I really adhere to. Did you hear me?
Yes, I did.
25 cents a week was our due.
25 cents a week, yeah. So
Dick, and I can't speak highly enough about him. We were going through some family issues at the time and some troubles, and Dick was Dick and along with some other people in my life, and I'd have to certainly mention my brother Gary, were just such a good, solid, square influence in my life. Dick, you know, what I loved about Dick is he always had a story. It's funny, it's my teaching method. It's the teaching method I use. He always had a story. You know, things would go bad. He would talk about somebody who was like me in some way, and it didn't matter. I mean, so it wasn't just the Olympic lifts, which clearly was a turning point in my athletic career. There's no question about that. But it's also I was hyper hypo when I met him as an athlete, and he taught me the importance of the tranquil mind. And I went from being couldn't control myself in sporting events to being the exact opposite. You know, fun to be around and enjoy. And I enjoyed sports after Dick. You know, we'd be at the national meet, and, you know, I'd be getting ready to, quick story, I'm getting ready to lift at my first nationals. You know, I'm nervous. I'm just a little punk, you know. I'm like 198 and, you know, an eighth pound, and, you know, that's with my socks on.
Right.
And so right before I make my first snatch, Dick says, now listen, there's a lot of cameras on. The CBS is here, and there's a lot of... So do not adjust yourself while you go up to the platform, because that's me on national TV, okay?
Yeah.
And, boy, talk about an icebreaker, you know? So I'm kind of chuckling, that lift, I just shot it over my head like it wasn't even on the platform. And, you know, he was a genius at that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Don't
adjust
yourself, because you'll be on national TV.
Get your mind off the real stuff.
Yeah, he was great about that kind of thing.
You know, I have a feeling that sometime during the course of the night, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about this tranquil mind kind of thing, because that intrigues me, and I suspect that it was influential to you for a lot of reasons. It might be helpful to other people as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we got somebody on the phone that would like to talk to you. So if you are ready, we're going to take our first call. I know who this person is. I recognize that telephone number from the Northwest. Scott, come on in. Say hi to Dan John. Welcome to CrossFit Live. Scott?
Hi, Dan. How are you doing?
Good. Excellent.
Just a quick, easy question for you to start off is, you know, having now been training with Dave for quite some time, we're doing a lot more lifting in a lot of different areas that's specific to squats and so forth. How imperative is it to control breathing and how important is breathing just through the whole movement?
Well, I recommend breathing. One of the moms asked me at the school about heart rate monitors, and I told her, and I looked her straight face, and I said, if the child's heart stops beating, we'll deal with it immediately, okay? You know, the breathing's a tough one. You know, I've tried all the methods, okay? I've tried the where you lift without, you know, without exhaling. You know, I've even tried throwing without exhaling, you know. And I have really gotten, I've come kind of full circle. I'm a big believer in it's got to come out, you know, and I like in the Olympic lifts, I'm a big fan of that raptor noise. You know what raptors in Jurassic Park?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know. You know, I find that very helpful, not only for me as a lifter, but as a coaching point when you go from the floor to just before the jump, you know, but whatever you want to call the jump, the, you know, the big pull. And then for throwers, I just don't know how you would hold it in. I make a puh sound, I guess, because my wife always imitates it. So in breathing, you know, I get it. I understand why some people hold their breath. I guess for huge squats, you don't want to let anything out. But at the same time, unless you're squatting, you know, an eyeball popping 900, you know, breathe the standard way, you know. You know, in when you pull in, and exhale when you push, when you drive away. You know, but that's a pretty, yeah. You're right. That was an easy one. Yeah.
Instincts really teach you a lot about breathing when you're when the loads go up. Your instincts get pretty good about when to hang on to breath and when to let it go.
Right.
All right, Scott. Thank you. We'll go ahead and call back if you have any more questions.
Okay.
Thanks for checking in. Now, Scott is as he mentioned to you, Scott's a client of mine. We've been doing some lifting, and he's a great guy, and he's really enthusiastic, and I was anxious to have you on tonight and have him listen to
what you
had to say. And I we've also been doing a lot of work with kettlebells, so I suspect that his question came mostly from, you know, the kettlebell drills, because I know that there's a lot of emphasis in some of the other kettlebell materials about breathing, so I'm sure that's probably where
you're right. You know, the kettlebell, you know, you have to make sure. You know, when people talk about kettlebell, I'm to the point that's like talking about a barbell. I always have to ask that follow-up question. Well, what do you mean by kettlebell training? Because if you're going to do that 250, you know, right-hand snatches in a row, that's a different breathing concept. I mean, you're breathing for survival there.
Right.
Versus, say, a bent press.
Right.
You know, and I think...
Yeah. No, I know what you mean.
Yeah, I think sometimes we have to be real. It's funny, I have found that the follow-up question is the most important question we ask. You know, because I think, sometimes I think you, I know what you mean, but
yeah.
I don't think I think, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do, yeah. We'll probably get back to this breathing thing just a little bit later on. Let me bring in another caller right now from the 530 area code. Welcome to CrossFit Live. Dan John's on. Who's this?
Hey, this is Rob Wolf.
Rob!
Hey! How you guys doing?
Hi, Rob.
We're having a good time so far. It's good to have you join up.
Awesome, cool.
What's on your mind?
We should ask Rob questions.
Yeah, we should.
I've already had my 10 seconds on this thing, so.
How you doing, Rob?
Really well, really well. How about you?
Oh, you know me. Staying ahead of it.
Cool. Yeah. Dan, tell us all about the modern pulling technique, the heel-centric, chin forward, butt back.
All right. I was teaching a group of people today, you know, and... the hardest thing to, now listen, you're about to hear someone who begs God that they could learn what I'm about to say. I wish I'd have known this. You know, as many as you know, I've snatched 314 in competition, but I swear I was good for 360, 370 if I would have known what I'm about to tell you. And it's not exaggeration. You know, we were taught, you know, that it's, you know, you stay on your toes. Well, when you're lifting up a big weight, and you stay on your heels so that you can wiggle your toes, you have a chance to not get pulled forward. But if you're flat-footed, you'll get pulled up on your toes. And if you're on your toes, you're dead. You're going to walk forward.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first great realization that, yes, the force plate studies are going to tell me that the great ones lift full-footed. But to lift full-footed with a bar in your hand and not a 25-pound bar, let's, you know, it's got to be 250, you've got to be on your heels so the weight pulls you to the full foot.
Okay.
And to make it happen, there's a couple of things I do. First, I put plates under the toes. That's a big one for a drill. The other one, I'm constantly telling my lifters to wiggle their toes. Ask my Mike Rosenberg. I say that about 300 times. But I mean, from the beginning, let's just start. There's two rules in the weight room, and I don't care what lift you're doing. Here are the two rules, and you can send me money later for saying this.
Okay.
First off, I don't care what you're doing in the weight room. You have to have a big chest. There's a wonderful movie called Sandlot, where the boys are at the swimming pool, and the hot lifeguard walks by.
Right.
And every single one of them sticks out their chest. If you can see that video, that's the greatest lifting moment, teaching moment of all time. They all stick out their chest. Now, and I'd like our listeners to do this, is just sit up tall, make your chest spread as big as you can, and put your hand on your lower back. You'll notice that your whole lower back, those spinal erectors tighten into little cobras, and that's number one. Anything you do in the weight room, now that's true for squatting, front squatting, overhead squatting. It's true for most deadlifts. Maybe stiff leg, those stretching ones, but who does those anymore? Romanian deadlift, no question about it. Bench press, no question about it. You want that chest big and spread.
Mm-hmm.
No question. Incline, military, the whole thing. Rule number one, spread the chest, get a big chest, have a Mr. Universe chest. Rule two, in the weight room, you live on your heels. Now, listen, out in the field of play, you're on your toes. But in my weight room, you're on your heels. So this is a trick I show people all the time. It's amazing. I can improve your bench press a lot just by having you dig your heels into the ground as you start the attempt.
Hmm.
Dig your heels in.
Instead of the toes?
Yeah. And it's like, well, how does that work? Well, the first thing you do is that it makes you stay solid and keeps your chest up. So those are the two rules, Rob. And if you have those two rules understood, we can move on to anything you want to talk about in the weight room. But if you lose sight of those two rules, type them down, memorize them, you know, big chest, weight on heels.
And send Dan money.
Because Dan John Enterprises are so vast. I'm such a businessman.
That's right.
Now, when you address the bar, then, when you put your hands on the bar for the snatch or the clean, it doesn't matter what the lift is. Let's use the snatch, okay? You get a wide grip for the snatch. When you squeeze yourself down to start the lift, you got to make sure you have your chest spread, and you got to make sure the weight is on the heels. So when you have the bar hasn't even come off the ground, you're already trying to wiggle it. Now, to make it work easier, I always tell people to stick their chin forward like I'm going to punch it.
Okay.
That's a really good mental image. I'm going to try to, you know what, you know, you stick your chin out, you know, punch my face, you know, punch my chin, punch those old, you know, Little Rascal shows.
Right.
So to address the bar, you get your grip, you get your big chest, weight on the heels, wiggle your toes, stick your chin out like I'm going to punch it. But let me tell you, right there, you're miles ahead of everybody else. And the first command I use is the word heels. And what you do is you try to drive your heels straight down into the earth. You try to push your heels as far as that can go. And that command takes the bar to 1 inch below the knees. At 1 inch below the knees, I have my athletes stop at first, okay, at the heels position. We call it heels, okay? And that's just to teach them to start with the heels. You don't want to do the BYU pull where you stick your ass up first, okay?
Right.
You want to push your heels in the ground first. Now, once you get to the heel position, one inch below the knees, wiggle your toes. And then as a coach, I walk over and say, let me punch your chin, okay? And then I say, butt back, butt back, butt back, okay? The next position we move up to is called up. Pretty simple. All you're going to do is move the bar from 1 inch below the knees to 1 inch above the knees or so. Now, it could, you know what I'm saying. My hand is all over the place on this phone call, but sort of-ish 1 inch. In the snatch, maybe 5 inches above the knee, but certainly the clean, 1 inch.
Okay.
And you go from heel to up simply by, and it's funny, I can't really explain it. You just make yourself go higher by stretching the hamstrings more.
Driving the knees back out of the way?
Whatever mental thought you take, it's funny. Explaining it takes 3 hours.
Right.
With 135 pounds in the snatch grip in your hand, you get it instantly.
Okay.
In the up position, I make them wiggle their toes, stick your chin out, you know, and then to release all that terrible pressure in your hamstrings, I say jump. Now, jump may or may not be a great term, but it seems to be the most effective
mm-hmm.
because everyone seems to understand that. Right then, to make my hamstring stop making me hurt, I'm going to release it by jumping. If you have your chin jutted forward, that huge upper body is going to act as a lever and drive that bar right to the ceiling. I rarely have to talk about arms, ever, ever. Because
do people have less arm bend with this?
Oh, yeah. Now, here's the other thing. Now, when you first get, for example, I get a lot of good athletes who have come from other sports. You know, guys who can do 300 ring dips and they can climb up a rope upside down with a kettlebell in their teeth. Now these guys, you know who we're talking about, those
right.
kind of guys.
Yeah. Guys like Rob.
Yeah, guys like Rob, yeah. So when I give them a weight, if we're a training weight of 95 pounds, these guys can literally do a wide grip upright row and press with it. I have this magical cure. I add more weight.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you wrote that down because it's genius.
Add more weight. Okay.
Add more weight.
Wait a minute. How do you spell add?
Okay, A-D-D.
I got it. Okay.
You'll get to a weight where all of a sudden it's like, oh, I can't do my little cheek thing, and they have to jump. So here is the exercise for those guys, okay? You do a power snatch and an overhead squat. Repeat, mm-hmm. repeat, repeat, repeat. So a set of five. Every time you do a power snatch and overhead squat, bring the bar down slowly, let it barely touch the floor, and then go through heels, up, jump, overhead squat, bring it down slowly, heels, up, jump. Now what you'll find is that as they get exhausted, they start to catch those power snatches deeper and deeper
mm.
with less and less arm and more
jump.
Yeah.
What do you glute ham, whatever you want to call, trap.
Right.
Posterior chain, whatever phrase you want to throw, but we all know what I'm talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that thing is that kills people when you hit them, when you tackle somebody, those muscles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, when you throw somebody over your head in judo, those muscles.
Right.
You know, when you do a souffle in wrestling, that set of muscles,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so that's how I teach it. Now, the other thing I found that I found was remarkable, and it was only till recently that I figured out why it worked so well, is when you do the Romanian deadlift. Now, this is an important lift. I never believed it was very good because I never did it right. The first time I did it right, I thought it was a genius lift.
Mm-hmm.
Is you have your athlete stand 1 inch away from a wall, and you, weight on your heels, big chest, and then touch the wall with your butt. Good, mm-hmm. easy. Now step forward 2 inches. Repeat, touch the wall with your butt. They have a bar in their hand, loaded, 40 kilos, 50 kilos, 85, 95, 115 pounds, okay, something in that range. And you keep having them inch out and just touch their butt on the wall. And it's funny because at first I thought they were doing it wrong. A lot of the college kids just collapse into this odd-looking V. But when I finally did it, I realized, wait a second, that's exactly what I'm trying to teach.
Mm-hmm.
They just kind of fall. They just kind of tumble back. Their toes are straight up in the air. They're on their shoes. They're on that little wedge of the back of the heel.
Right.
But their hamstrings are like rocks. And it's like, oh, you cheated, but you got the right idea. So the Romanian deadlifts on the wall is concomitant teaching with the words I gave you, Rob. So you need to do the Romanian deadlift against the wall and then the address the bar, heels up, jump, address the bar, heels up, jump, and then the exercise, overhead snatch, overhead squat, snatch, overhead squat, and kind of rotate through those three different things.
Okay.
Now, I said there's three things there. The Romanian deadlift against the wall, that orchestrated heels up, jump, where you correct positions all the way up,
mm-hmm.
that's drill number two, and then the more free-flowing drill, power snatch and overhead squat. It can be power clean and front squat too. If okay,
sure.
And that's how you teach. That's how you teach the heels only method.
Wow,
that's about a $3 million call right there. That's pretty good stuff, man. I hope you got that down. That's good.
All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for tonight because we can't take any more.
Tip your waitress as well, folks. We're here all week.
That's right. Thank you very much.
So what I just basically told you is how you take, and I've taken college athletes who are very accomplished, and again, I don't want to get them wrapped in my own personal fantasies, but I've helped a girl from the eighth grade to Olympic trials, and this was one of the things that really made a difference in her career. I've got a number of Pac-10 throwers, a number of Big 12, Big 10 throwers that I work with, a bunch of smaller college people. And this is the thing that they come back and tell me year after year. And cause I sometimes only work with them for 1 week at discus camp. But by giving them the tools of the wall drill, the exercise, the exercise, it's called the exercise. That's power snatch, overhead squat. The story behind that, real quick. I had a young man here who played football for Alta High School, and his coach would only let them lift weights in a bodybuilding program 4 days a week, upper body, lower body. You know, it was like 7 sets of 12 of, decline, overhead, skull-crushing kickbacks,
Right.
God, what a bunch of crap, So this boy who had worked with me as a discus thrower had to go home. God, what's Charlie doing in the basement? Oh my God, he's weightlifting. God, Martha, I thought he was watching porn on the internet. And so he would go in his basement and do, with his little home bar, power snatch, overhead squat, power snatch, overhead squat. Well, he averages 200 yards a carry, 200 yards a game as a running back the first 6 weeks.
Wow.
And the local paper says, what's your secret? And he says, well, I do this thing we call the exercise. And that's what it was. And it's like, it was funny because it was a nice little hats off to what we do here at the Murray Institute.
Right.
And it was also very nice because it also said that the coach's program,
Improper perspective.
Yeah. It's just so bad. I mean, they wouldn't squat. I mean, it was something you'd give grandma at the gym. It was adductors and,
Yikes.
Weights on their ankles to do, outside hip work.
Yikes.
What the hell?
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever, But they're not my kids. I don't care that much,
Dan, with this method, and maybe this is losing sight or just goofy question, but how much of when the hip brush or the scoop happens, how much of a horizontal hip thrust is going on versus kind of an upward emphasis sort of scoop or hip brush?
All right, let's go back into another sport real quick. Let's go back to shot putting. You want the shot put to go in an absolute straight line from the start to finish. Well, to do that, you have to do one of two things. Either throw the shot through your head, which is impossible because your head usually gets out of the way, or B, move your body around the shot. It's the same idea, Rob. As you jump, you move your body around the bar. The genius of Dimas and those guys, if you look at them closely, is that they are moving their body around the bar. In fact, one of the words that they use to get under in the overhead squat now is wedge. They are wedging themselves. What's the least I can pull it to wedge myself under the bar?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think there's some real genius to that.
Dan, have you ever looked at a whitish arm giant circles in gymnastics? Have you ever seen that done?
Yeah.
Maybe sometime if you get a chance, look at that again and see if you see any inkling of similarity between this.
So it
seems like everything in gymnastics always moves towards a straight arm stuff. Like the bent arm is kind of a beginner intermediate situation.
Right.
And then everything moves to this straight arm thing in which the person is moving about the bar.
See, and I would argue we're doing that in the Olympic lift. I mean,
right.
You look at I especially like Dimas's technique, as many of you know, because I always thought it was so clean in the snatch. You'll notice his big lift. It's like, well, when does he bend his arms? And the point is, I'm not sure he does.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
I know he does because he has to because right. we have to.
But it happens so fast that you don't see it for one thing.
Yeah. So I think you're on the right track there, and so. And I've had people say, well, aren't you worried that they'll just, teaching it your way, they'll just swing the bar overhead? Yeah, that's true. A big, strong guy like me can do it with 95 pounds. I can't do it 295.
Yeah.
You know, I have to pull it correctly. The bar wins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gravity, all that stuff, Newton, that whole religion of physics that I don't necessarily believe. Wait, let me see if gravity works. That still does. Yeah, you know, that stuff is all fairly true. You know, you're not
going to
be able to. That's not going on hold for right now. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not. Gravity is not going to suddenly take off just because I'm lifting weights. Yeah.
Right.
So,
Dan, one more thing. Tell everybody about your DVD.
Oh, I don't know if I can.
Yeah, you can. Of course you
okay.
can.
Okay. If you go to Rob's website, I have a DVD. It's called Carried Away. It was a labor of love for a lot of people who wondered why so many of the athletes that work with me, and it's true, people who work with me, they make these huge jumps, you know. And one of the reasons is because we really do a lot of loaded runs and a loaded carries, you know, bars overhead, bars on back, deadlift carries with the sled, deadwood carries with the sled in a backpack, you know, 150-pound backpack. And it's the method of madness that we use here. And I'm very proud of it. I think that the Kelly who put it together did a fabulous job. And it's fun. And I've already started working on the next one. Basically, your question, Rob, about how I teach weights. Because people are amazed that, you know, I get such a turnaround. I take somebody who has a very bad background and things and turn them around. So that's the next idea, you know, lifting, you know, kind of a, you know, all these things like address the bar and heels and things like that. And the easy thing is, you know, most people look at it and go, it's so simple. Well, welcome to my, if I have a genius as a coach, everything we do is simple. It's not easy, but
right.
It's simple.
Simple.
It's simple. And the funny thing is, man, if you're good enough to be simple, you can coach people. The hard thing is staying simple. I was quoting you today, Rob, in fact, about how you summarized the famous diet for me. And the 3 points you said, the famous diet summary is, eat protein at every meal, eat fiber at every meal, eat your fish oil. And I thought, that is so simple. Now, the problem is, the listeners tonight will find 1,000 ways not to have protein and fiber at every meal.
Right.
They won't eat their fish oil. Why didn't you eat your fish oil at lunch? Oh, I just feel stupid carrying them in my... Okay, you feel stupid. If you want to beat me, you're going to have to eat your fish oil.
Right.
You know, and eat your... You know what I'm saying?
Right.
The genius ideas, the things that... Yeah, the things that change lives are simple.
Dan, a little more about your DVD. This is just a compilation of some of the various techniques you use to improve conditioning? Is that...
No, it's just... It's just the... It's... You know, I've got a 3-part mantra, you know, pick weights up off the ground, right. Put them overhead, and carry them for distance or time.
Right.
It's the third one, carry them for distance or time.
Okay.
And it's just, I kind of have this idea that over the next, you know, few years, I'll put together a number of DVDs. And here's the point, and I think, Rob?
Yeah.
Is it $29?
$29, yeah.
Yeah, it's $29, and I don't think... And we spent a lot of money. I would hope people would understand. If you ever hit my website, you'd know. I mean, I certainly do things for free. But a lot of people encouraged me to make sure people bought this, because otherwise I would be, you know, kind of financing things. So I think the price is very reasonable. In fact, it's funny, Rob will tell you, I'm very uncomfortable hawking my own wares.
That's
true.
Why I forced the issue.
I'm not very comfortable. Yeah.
I can definitely say that everyone, we get email constantly from people, New Zealand, Spain, the States, all over the planet, who are watching this DVD and getting huge benefit from it and really loving it. It's a good piece of work and entertaining and really well done. Really well done.
Yeah, and the ideas are simple. The hard thing is that they're very hard. You know, they're not easy.
If you get out and do these drills at any level of intensity with any amount of weight,
they are self-intensifying, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you put a backpack on that weighs 150 pounds, and you carry a sled that weighs 75, and you've got 110 pounds in each hand, and you have to go 50 feet. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you brought intensity. Right. What you're about to do is going to be intense.
Right.
You know, it's like childbirth. Whether you want to do it or not, that doesn't really matter anymore.
Right.
You know.
Rob, you are the you're the storefront for this DVD.
We are, yeah.
So how do people get it that are listening?
If you go to CrossFitNorCal.com, click on the store, then you'll see Carried Away right mixed in with our Jerks and Snatches t-shirts. So
and mixed in with your stuff is Performance Menu. I want you to tell everybody about that again. Remind folks how to get
it. It's a journal. We publish it monthly. It comes out on the 15th. Main focus is effective nutrition, performance, health, and longevity. We delve into any of the other areas of training, from martial arts to Olympic lifting to anti-aging medicine. So it covers the gamut.
Very cool. And they CrossFit NorCal again, or is there a separate website for that?
There is a Performance Menu website, but you can reach it off of the CrossFit NorCal site.
All right.
Yeah.
And they had a great article by me, as I recall.
The very last issue.
Yes, it was a typical rant.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you putting those in, you know.
I love it. You're awesome, Dan. You really have helped so many people. I'm thanking you for a lot of people who won't get the chance to. You've made a huge difference for a lot of people, the CrossFit community and far beyond that. So thank you.
I really do appreciate that, yeah.
All right, Rob, we appreciate you calling in as always. You feel free to call anytime.
I will do it, Dave. Take care and good job.
Dan, let's talk a little bit more about your Olympic lifting coaching techniques.
Okay.
I'd like to find out what your learning progressions are for the various movements like clean, snatch, squat, and the like.
Sure.
But first of all, when somebody walks in the door that's never Olympic lifted before and might even not even be able to define a squat versus a snatch, what's the first thing you teach them?
Well, you're not going to like this. I don't coddle very much. I mean, I don't coddle at all. Let's just say you show up to my gym day one, you're going to be snatching in an hour, so you don't have much time to be coddled, okay? What I start with is I call it the pick up the potato squat. And what you do is you interlace your fingers and then you pretend you're picking up a sack of potatoes on the ground and you take your interlaced fingers and you put them basically to where your arches are, between your arches.
Right.
And then we stand up. And it's amazing the number of people who can do that naturally and perfectly. If I tell them to pick up a sack of potatoes with a big chest and weight on the heels, everybody squats correctly. If I put them under a bar, the first thing to do is drive their knees forward and do that bizarre gold gym crap, faggy, do-rag, spandex pants, gloves, eye pod in the ear, bullshit stuff.
I got you.
You know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Although you say it a little better than I do, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
So, and then, you know, mom will say, well, little Cynthia can't squat because it hurts their knees. And I say, well, she's not squatting.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So we do the pick up at the potato squat. Now, you think we just do it once. What we do is we might do, okay, let's do a quick set of 10 and you're on. Good. Okay, I let them rest for 5 seconds. Let's do a quick set of, let's start on the bottom this time. Start on the bottom. Mm-hmm. Quick set of 10 from the bottom to the bottom. Okay, good. The next thing, now I call these Zurchers. They are not Zurcher squat. Audience, don't email us. I know what a Zurcher squat is, but this is what I call Zurchers. Then I have them get a dumbbell. Depending on body weight, it can be as light as 15 pounds, heavy as 65. And I ask them to hold it like a goblet, okay? And the holding like a goblet means you hold the one end of the dumbbell between your hands like a goblet. And so the bottom, so I'm holding the one end, and the bottom is hanging down free. Does mm-hmm. that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm holding
I
like a
it.
Goblet.
Okay.
And then we have them do squats with the we should call them goblet squats now that I think about them. And what the only rule is this, is as you go down, your elbows drive your knees out. So as you squat down, your elbows drive your knees out. Well, what happens is you see the young lifter is so focused on having the elbows push the knees out that they naturally squat absolutely perfectly.
Hmm.
It's amazing to watch. Dave, I'm telling you, it's amazing to watch. If I put a bar in their back, they'll squat wrong.
Right.
But if I put a dumbbell in their hands, funny thing is, did you hear the dumbbell weights I have?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, just put 60. That's a bar and 10s on each side.
Mm-hmm.
With a dumbbell, that boy will do it without even thinking.
Hmm.
I can have them use a 95-pound dumbbell, and they'll do it without even thinking. If I put a bar and 25s on each side, it hurts my back.
Mm-hmm.
It sticks. Can I get a towel? Right? You know that.
Yes, I do.
So first we do potato sack squats, and then we do the Zercher or goblet squats, okay?
All right.
The truth is, I could stop right there, and you have a better athlete.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
From there, I generally, and I take this from Mike Bergener, is we move to the PVC pipes.
Mm-hmm.
With the PVC pipes, I then go over the snatch or the clean, and I get them back into that, to the squat position, like an overhead squat.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is we forget everything. So now I look around and go, what are you guys doing? And then I always say this, then we do potato squats, mm-hmm. Zercher squats, and then overhead squats with PVC.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, if you can do that in about a 15, 20 second period,
right.
5 or 6 potato squats, 1 or 2 those goblet squats, and then put the sticks back up, they all drop down perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
They don't push their knees forward. They sit down between their legs.
Yeah.
So that's the progression I use
okay.
to teach squats. I immediately move in the next day, the day after, and it's your call what you want to do next. If you go to cleans, they're going to get real confused when they get to snatches. I think you go snatch next.
Okay.
This is experience talking. I have no research to back us up. I know some people say squat, then clean.
Mm-hmm.
I just find that if you go squat, then snatch, it seems simpler to go to the clean after it.
Right.
If you go clean, you'll look around the room and there'll be 5 girls with clean grip doing clean grip
mm-hmm.
snatches and 5 boys muscling.
Right, it's ugly. Yeah.
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 So that's, and then I use the progression of address the bar, heels, up, jump.
Right.
And then one extra word you should know is a word I use. When we do cleans, I use the word squeeze. And that means when you catch the bar, you squeeze your buttocks together and
mm-hmm.
you try to drive your heels into the ground
mm-hmm.
And your catch.
Mm.
That prepares you for the jerk. That prepares you for the press. And it's just a good, solid upper body position.
Mm-hmm.
That word is squeeze.
Okay.
Okay?
I like that.
That's my progression.
So next, I suppose somewhere in the execution of the snatch, especially the snatch, but probably the clean too, you teach misses. And I'd like to find out how you teach lifters to miss.
Oh, it's neat. Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Okay, this is kind of cool.
Okay.
The first time I see someone struggle with the bar overhead, I walk over to a bar, and of course, it's funny because it probably is 95 pounds. But by the time the school hears it, it's 300 pounds, okay?
Right.
And what I do is I snatch throw it, and I throw it as high as I can. And I'm telling you, with 95 pounds, I can probably get close to 10, 11 feet, right?
Right.
And I let that bar sail into the sky. And it lands on rubber mats,
mm-hmm.
on bumper plates,
right.
And it makes, even then, a hellacious amount of noise.
Right.
And I stand there and I say, see? I didn't get hurt at all.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what's funny? And I walk over the bar's not hurt either. And that demonstration does more to teach about missing than all the 1 or 2 hours of instruction you need.
Mm.
If you're going to miss the bar,
right.
Let it go.
Yeah.
And it's funny, I know some people teach misses. I just do that demonstration, and it's funny because most of the kids kind of just look at each other and nod and say, okay, if I get in trouble, I'll drop the bar.
Yeah.
We don't have very many misses. I don't, you know, kids miss snatches out front, you know, and then they try to muffle it up because it's so light.
Mm-hmm.
Cleans, it just gets so ugly, and that's why I don't like kids going heavy cleans.
Yeah.
Until you've had a couple of months,
right.
You know, under your belt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they keep falling back to this kind of weird deadlift reverse curl thing, you know.
Mm-hmm. Tell me what's a typical week for you? What does your week entail?
Well, first off, you have to realize, you know, that I've been out of teaching for a decade.
Yeah.
And I was an administrator, you know, and sat in a desk all day and
right.
pontificated on the telephone. So for me, it's kind of odd because you're catching me literally with just the first month under my belt. I'm a rookie again.
Yeah.
I've been teaching since 1979, but here I am a rookie. We have an odd schedule. Well, that's not odd. It's called the A-B schedule. We have A days and B days. So I only get to with my athletes some weeks just twice and some weeks three times.
Mm-hmm.
So a typical week for me is, you know, we repeat, you know, the A workout, the A day and the B day are the same workout. And so very often we get kind of hung up with these dangling workouts, and we've kind of come up with a way to fix that. But, you know, I roll out of bed. You know, my daughter goes to the same school I teach at, which was one of the real, it's funny. You know, my education is all in theology and religious studies.
Mm-hmm.
And, she didn't want me to teach theology at the school. She didn't want me to be a theology teacher, but she's very comfortable with me being the weight coach. It's just amazing to me.
Mm.
So we roll out of bed. I have another daughter who goes to St. Francis Xavier over here in Kern. And we get up and attempt to eat. I eat a good breakfast, and I attempt to get my girls off the hair dryer. And then I drive to school, and either I make coffee or someone has already made it.
Right.
We sit around, we laugh for a few minutes, and then I go to what I consider the cushiest, easiest, most wonderful job. If you die, now this is it. There are Buddhists who would, when they die, want my job. There are, it is what you want to do. What do? I teach weightlifting. Let's review what I do. I get paid. Now listen to me. Money. It goes into my checking account. I've actually bought things with this for teaching weightlifting.
Yes.
I get paid to teach people to squat. I get paid to teach people to snatch.
Kind of borderlines on ill-gotten gains, doesn't it?
It is shocking to me in this day and age. I'm telling you, my friend, it is remarkable.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear about our typical workout?
Yeah, I do, sure. As a matter of fact.
Okay. the thing is, you know, our Catholic schools here in Utah are very strong academically. So I kind of made a decision early in the whole process that the warm-up would always be the same, because I see the warm-up as a gear change.
Mm-hmm.
And so we take roll, we say a short prayer, Lord, the sea is so large and our boats are so small.
Mm-hmm.
And then we start with, they all get PVC pipe. And it's funny, I have 6-foot pieces and 4-foot pieces. And some of the kids honestly fight over the 4-foot pieces thinking they're lighter. And I don't have the heart to tell, you know, what you move on. We start off with 3 sets of 8 in the overhead squat.
Right.
That doesn't take very long. We then do 3 sets of 8 in the push-up. With the sticks, we do the Samson stretch, you know, the hip stretch.
Yep.
And then we go over, put the sticks back, we go over and grab medicine balls and do the ab throw. That's like a sit-up with an ab ball, and
mm-hmm.
you throw it. Okay?
Know it well.
One set of 25, and then they put the balls away, and they do 3 sets of 8 in the pull-up or an adapted pull-up. Very few kids, I don't think anyone's done 3 sets of 8 yet.
Yeah.
But that one of the ideas, one kid told me, my goal is to do the warm-up. You know, I thought, well, here we go.
Something
and then they have a minute or two to do a free stretch. But one thing I discovered is the kids tell me what's left to stretch,
mm-hmm.
which tells me that all that yoga and all that Swiss ball junk
mm-hmm.
is just what I thought it was when I first saw it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So after that, we then do a variation. We call it the workout of the day. It's a variation, one that made people very sore. Was this is the challenge bar, okay? For a varsity boy, you did 185-pound deadlift 10 times
mm-hmm.
and jumped up on the medium box 20 times, 3 circuits.
Yep.
And I had a boy do that in 3 minutes and 3 seconds.
Mm.
Now, do the math.
Yeah. He's
30
flying.
Deadlifts
yeah.
and 60 jumps
yeah.
in 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Now, this kid is just over-the-top
yeah.
athlete, you know.
Yeah.
But now after that you're crushed. I mean, those are very some are easy, some are hard. I've adapted a lot of the CrossFit ideas. I've made up, you know, I stole a bunch from Mark Twight's Jim Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, now we're inventing, you know, stuff every day. You know, from there I have 5 platforms. I have 27 Olympic bars, 5 Alumilite Olympic bars, 4 thick bars, 93 bumper plates. So after that, we generally lately we've been doing front squats with chains, generally something like 8 sets of 3, and bench press with chains, 8 sets of 3, some kind of other lift, a snatch, a clean, a deadlift, a box jump, and then we finish with some kind of isometric ab. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of the template, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow's workout is Conga Line 5-4-3-2-1-1-2-3-4-5, a front squat, back squat, and box jump after a max deadlift test.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to be – the problem with only lifting 2 or 3 days a week, you have to be kind of clever
mm-hmm.
on how you put it together.
Right. Well, you get students that are they kind of come into your class who are looking for the body
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the capacity. How do you win them over?
Well, the first 2 weeks, I heard a kid say, "When are we going to start doing curls?" Now that same boy hasn't mentioned anything since then.
Right.
You know, I mean, we are you know, and it's not that I'm against curls,
right.
but if you do your pull-ups, you don't need curls,
right?
You know, and I guess they can complain all they want. I mean, there's just every time someone comes up with a great idea to do more, I say, "Good, we'll do it," and the other kids want to beat them up. You know?
Yeah.
What do you mean, do more, you idiot? Because, I mean, the workouts are hard. You
right.
know, the workouts are hard.
Right.
You know.
So I'd like to find out from you how you see the history of weight training in schools, and especially the high school setting. Because I got to tell you, Dan, when I went to high school, I'm sorry, there wasn't a weight bar in the school. And all of a sudden, you know, a few years ago, I'm going back to schools and I'm seeing, you know, weight rooms in there. And I'm thinking, when did this happen? And how did this, I like it, but when did this happen? What do you know about that? How did this all kind of become accepted practice in the high school setting?
Well, still not. So you have to be careful there.
Really?
Here it is.
Okay.
Very
yeah, I've been hanging around you and Bergner, you know, so. I think it's everywhere, so.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, you go back to the 60s and the Universal gyms start showing up. And, you know, they threw away all the bars that had shown up in the late 40s and early 50s. And then there was a belief for a while, late 50s, early 60s, that somehow weightlifting turned you into some kind of sexual deviant and stuff, which is true. But, you know, okay, that was a joke. Okay, I don't know if you got that. And then in the 60s, that Universal machine shows up.
Yeah.
And funny, when that shows up, a whole bunch of other stuff starts coming back, too. Real weightlifting bars, there were a whole bunch of people out there doing them, and mostly in track and field. What was funny is that, you know, when Arthur Jones and those huge spreads show up in Athletic Journal, you know, that sent American athletics back probably 2 or 3 generations. You know, the Nautilus, the high intensity, you know, well, they call it high intensity, but, you know, that Nautilus stuff. You got this idea that if you're a high school coach there in a poor school district, you would never be able to compete with those guys with the fancy machines.
Right.
And then, so what happened is, there, instead of anything happening, this kind of quiet time happens where the jogging craze kicks in, the tennis craze, the racquetball craze, high carbs, stretching. Oh, God, the stretch, you know.
Yep.
You could, instead of going to a weightlifting class in the high school, you go to a stretching class.
Mm-hmm.
And we now know the research is pretty clear. The more you stretch, the more hurt you get.
Mm-hmm.
I remember standing next to Jim Fossil. He's a coach for the Ravens now. He was the coach of the Giants when he was a coach up at the U. And halfway through practice, they didn't call them strength coaches at the time. What do they call them? Conditioning coaches. Stops practice. And they all start stretching. And Jim says to me, and this was another one of those little funny moments in your life, call it a turning point, if you will.
Right.
He says, you know, when we were young, we never stretched, and we never got hurt. Now we stretch before practice, after practice, and in the middle of practice. And I kind of stopped and went, wait a sec. We never stretched either, and we never got hurt. And all of a sudden I thought, why are those college football players doing jazzercise?
Mm-hmm.
What part of their game involves jazzercise? Stepping up on blocks, clapping their hands, and saying, woo. Oh, well, I never seen that in a game. You know?
Yeah. What part of the game do I apply this to? Right.
None. And so, I mean, it was like one of those moments where, and after that, you know, that's about the same time I met Brian Oldfield, the great shot putter, and John
mm-hmm.
Powell, and
yeah.
I realized that it was okay to start swimming against this current of idiocy
mm-hmm.
that is so rampant in America.
Right.
You know, the eat carbs, stretch out your legs,
mm-hmm.
Go jogging. These high school coaches, track coaches, they call themselves,
right,
that start off practice with a 800 to a 1 mile jog. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got to jog. Why are you jogging? What event in track and field is slow?
Right.
I mean, have you ever seen a great track and field athlete go slow?
Yeah.
And I'm saying in anything.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Long jumper? Okay, I'm going to just mosey on up. No. So that stuff just drives me to drink, fortunately.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're not all of us are, not all of us are yet on the wave here.
You know? I see. All right. So you guys have managed to be able to create programs that are working just because you brought it with you.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right.
Exactly. Right.
So talk about your gym at home. What does it look like? Give us a sense about what kind of equipment you have at home.
Well, it's in half my garage, and I'll start you from the river. Okay, I live next to the Jordan River.
Okay.
And I mean right next to the Jordan River.
Okay.
And so we call that the way back, and that's where we do the sled pulls and the runs, and we do most of our throwing back there.
Right.
Then you come into the gate behind the honeysuckle, and there's a big volleyball net. And on the other side of the volleyball net is a little box, and inside the box is thick bar farmer bars, a 56-pound weight, a 20-pound weight, about seven or eight different kinds of shots, a bunch of different medicine balls, a badminton set, tons of volleyballs because, you know, we got volleyball players in the house here.
Mm.
Oh, gosh, cones and a sled for dragging. When you go around the corner, there's a hot tub and an outdoor shower.
Very important.
For recovery,
yes.
And the bistro, we call it the bistro.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bunch of green umbrellas with little tables where we have, you know, people for drinks and stuff.
Right.
And then you go, there's a pull-up bar as you walk into my gym, stereo, of course.
Yes.
And then I've got a heavy hammer, I've got an Olympic hammer, I've got all kinds of different odd little odds and ends, four total Olympic bars, a thick, a regular, a women's, and a kind of a crappy old one.
Mm-hmm.
I got chains. I got a bunch of plates. I've got a bunch of kettlebells. I've got a bunch of stuff to read when you're bored. I got an inclined bench, which an athlete just... Oh, by the way, everything is donated.
Ah.
Everything I own is donated.
Really?
Uh-huh. Former athletes. I don't charge anything.
Yeah.
And then what happens is sometimes it takes 5, 6, 7, 8 years.
Right.
Someone will show up in the door and say, hey, Dan, how you doing? And they'll be a, you know...
Yeah.
They'll have an incline bench,
right,
or a squat rack or something like,
right,
that for me.
That's worth some coaching.
Oh, yeah.
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 All right.
Well, and I mean, I always feel like I make it, you know, that's when I know I've made a difference, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you have the short version of your nutritional and supplementation advice that you give your students or anybody,
sure,
that you're training?
Ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, for my students, here's what I tell them. Now, for my elite athletes, it'll be different. I'm glad to tell you that one, too. Okay, ready? For my students, eat 3 meals a day.
Okay.
I'm telling you,
Is this a revelation to these people?
Hey, high school kids don't eat breakfast. High school girls don't eat breakfast. Don't happen. And they're passing out the first week in my class.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting calls from mommy about what a psychopathic I am. And it's like, what'd she eat for breakfast? She doesn't eat breakfast. Oh, yes, she does. We get her. Okay, you check tomorrow. You're right,
yeah.
Mr. John. She doesn't eat breakfast.
Yeah.
Okay, eat breakfast.
Right.
Okay, pretty easy one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, really.
So far, I'm able to grasp the concept.
If you've,
yeah,
done that, you're miles ahead.
All right.
You got to eat protein at every meal.
Okay.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And then the big thing I really push is no junk after, say, 5 or 6 o'clock.
Okay.
Really, you know, there's that book called No White at Night.
Right.
However you explain that, no cheap carbs at night.
Okay.
You know, if you're going to eat macadamia nuts, that's one thing.
Right.
But, you know, eating Twizzlers is another.
Got it.
Okay.
So there's the students.
There's the big three.
Right.
Now, to measure that, and this is just what I call mom's advice, you know, if you're hungry within an hour or two of a meal, you got to really check how much protein you're eating. My students who say they're hungry all the time, the first question, well, what do you eat? Well, I had a super big gulp, and then I had Cheetos, and then I had a bag of potato chips. And you're hungry?
Yeah.
Yeah, what's that all about? Because you haven't had protein.
Right.
But I ate a bunch of stuff. Yeah, you ate a lot of carbs.
Right.
If you're sleepy, you probably had, you got to check the, you know, your carbs.
Right.
And then the big three from Rob Wolf, and this is the next level, and that's this. At every meal, you have fiber, you have protein, and mm-hmm. you have fish oil.
Yeah.
And that's when you start moving up.
Mm-hmm.
For my better athletes, for the athletes that I can get past, crazy mom syndrome and stuff, I then start discussing, I like either what's called the anabolic diet or cyclical ketogenic dieting. And that's something, I don't know if I believe in it. I don't have a religious bias to it, but I sure like the idea of eating kind of low carb for a couple of days, 3, 4, 5 days, and then having a high carb thing.
Mm.
I like any, and I don't, personally, you know what? And I don't think there's anything. Now, maybe there is. Maybe you'll get someone like Lyle McDonald on here, or Deep Pasquale, or Rob Wolf,
right,
who will tell me, be able to explain the hormonal things. I just know that when an athlete has discipline in their diet and they randomize their diet, they improve. And better yet is when they have a disciplined, randomized diet with a disciplined, randomized training program. That's when they make the big leap. So, in other words, your breakfast is a workout.
Right.
Now, if you don't understand that, let me just explain it real quick. When you make your breakfast choice, you're making your breakfast choice because you want to become America's best shot putter.
Right.
You're in the ring eating your eggs.
The same reason you do the workout, in other words.
Right.
Yeah.
In other words, 3, 4, or 5 times a day, outside the circle, outside the weight room, outside the track, you are being a better athlete.
Right.
And the thing is, I don't care what diet you choose. Let's not use the word diet, but you know what I mean. I don't care what phrase you use to explain the eating program.
Right.
My thought is you should have something that makes you athletic.
Right.
And that's why I like that kind of thing, the 5 days low carb, 2 days high carb. And it doesn't have to be. When I say carb, I did not say all breads. I mean, it could be a fruit fest. It could be, whatever direction you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
But it's whatever it is, when people seem to, I don't want to go crazy on this, but it seems to help. Again, if you zone, it's the same idea. Though I'm sure
right.
a lot of your people are zoners.
Right.
The idea that 5 times a day you're measuring how much salami you put into something, that makes you a better athlete. Whether or not it does or not, I don't know, but I know the fact that you're measuring your cheese.
That means you're serious about everything else in your life.
Everything else is going to clean up.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So now this 7 day cycle you're talking about here, does this correspond to any kind of training cycle or training program?
You know, it can. In fact, I experimented with this a season or two ago. On my website, it's like combining CKD with fat loss workout or something like that. I can't remember. Yeah. It's on my website.
Mm-hmm.
The nice thing about me is I put everything out there, and even my failures. You can do that. Now, the interesting thing I found out is I've had athletes tell me that they do much better on the low-carb 5 days than they do on the high-carb 5 days. The athlete sitting 3 feet to the left of them goes, no. Man, when I high-carb, my discus goes 60 feet farther and I fly like the wind. All right. What that tells me is that there still is a lot of individuality. So here's the upside of that.
Or maybe other variables.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but for the Olympic trials, right. you want to be, maybe Charlie wants to be on the high carb day and
right.
Edna wants to be on the third day of her
low carb. Yeah.
Low carb.
Right.
It's true. I mean, I've also had, I work with female athletes and, we've had to discuss the menstrual cycle.
Right.
I have one athlete who claims that she is at her finest on her period.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had other athletes say that the other lady is making this up. That can't be possible. So there are absolute lot of variations in what we're saying here.
Right.
The thing is, I like anything. And I don't care what, if you had callers calling in saying, Dan, I'm an athlete and I eat rutabagas 6 times a day and that seems fine.
Yeah.
I know nutrition is the foundation. I'm not stupid. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
But from there, it's the mental side, you know, that really seems to make a difference.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah, your discipline, your dedication, your the way you approach things like nutrition will result in how much you study, how much you pay attention to your own body. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
You're on the right. Exactly.
Okay.
You know, I have a mental training thing for my track and field athletes, and one of the things is become a student. You should be able to name the world record holder in your event.
Yeah.
Oh, in the high school? Yeah. Nobody. Nobody. It's unheard of.
Yeah.
Kids are throwing. And I'll talk to a group of kids who are serious throwers, and they don't even know that Germans are good discus throwers. You know, it's like, okay.
Yeah. You know? So, Dan, let's talk about resource material. I'd like to get your short list, or what the heck, your long list. I don't care. Books, other reading material that that you regard as high quality in the world of things like lifting technique, historical background, competition, things like that, also things like videos, that kind of thing. What's
all right? Well, you know, it's funny because you know. I can remember just a few years ago thinking the internet was a joke, but I will tell you that I think there's a couple places on the web that are worth your time to search. And I'm telling you, and I'm not just sending smoke here. CrossFit has some remarkable message boards and some amazing archives with the workouts.
Yeah.
I also like T Nation. Now you'll say, oh well, it's because Dan John writes for him. Hey, you know what? You type in a famous person's name and sit back and look how many hits you get.
Right.
I mean, it is amazing. Well, T Nation is Poliquin, Staley, even that retard Dan John, you know. I mean, there's a
lot. Let anybody on there. Okay.
Yeah, they let anybody in there. There's a couple other places I like, too, but I don't have web addresses for them. I sure like my buddies at the Power and Bulk Forum. Those guys just crack me up and... They also are just great about sharing good information. There's some track and field links that are pretty good, but so that's the funny thing is I've become to the point that by the time a book is published now, I've known about that stuff for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's Dancing with Hats makes you have a better bench. The Dancing with Hats forum's been talking about it for 6 weeks.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Books, right. Boy. Let me just kind of circle around a little bit in kind of a mad form for you, okay?
Okay. Right.
I still think that Arnold, the Educational Bodybuilder, is just one of those books that there's a lot of gems in that book. You know, and the thing is, people don't read the book right. What they do is they think they're immediately too good, but, you know, he says, you know, you should do push-ups, chin-ups, and, you know, free squats for a long time.
Right.
Nobody takes his advice.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with it. You know, I think there's some real good stuff in that book.
Right.
I still like Tommy Kono's book. I know it's hard to get a hold of. You have to order it from him, but it's the Olympic lifting, weightlifting Olympic-style book.
Mm-hmm.
If you go on the web and you go to the crazy Olympic lifting sites, they'll tell you how to get the book. I think it's still in print. It's only a couple of years old, but it is. Oh, it's a masterpiece. He doesn't talk about the heels only technique,
mm-hmm.
and maybe some of the stuff is dated. I don't know. I'm not that insane, but I still think it's a fabulous. I mean, just a fabulous book. Artie Dressler's Weightlifting Encyclopedia has it's your one stop shop for everything ever even thought of in the weightlifting.
Yep.
I mean, if someone had a thought in 1931, it's in there and cross-referenced. I mean, it's a shocking resource. I know Brooks Kubik is under a lot of, a lot of people are angry with him for, whatever reasons, I'm not really sure. But
yeah.
I've always liked the book Dinosaur Training. I really thought that was a pretty good piece of work. And I really did like his Dino Files, and then he just kind of stopped producing them. I still think it's worth your money to find those back issues of Strength and Health in the 60s and 70s.
Oh, really?
Oh, if you can get them online. It's amazing to read those, some of the programs, and, it's just some fabulous stuff. I spend quite a bit of money trying to I'm trying. One of my goals over the next decade or so is to get the whole collection from about 60, 61 to about 78, 9, you know, in that era.
Yeah.
You know, because they're just fabulous.
Huh.
Books I look at a lot. I sure like Neanderthin by Ray Audet. You know, it's kind of bizarre, but it's a good diet book. If you can't kill it with a stick, don't eat it. It's fun reading. It's a little out there, but it's a good read.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I really like Ken Shamrock's book, Lion, Into the Lion's Den. He's the wrestler,
yeah,
the Ultimate Fighting Champion.
Mm-hmm.
I like that book a lot. I like the biography section, and then I really like what he talks about. I think he calls it callousing. How you make your body tougher and tougher and tougher.
Hmm.
Diet stuff in there is, yeah, it's okay. I mean, it's, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
Weightlifting, the pictures of their technique is terrible, but the principles are very good.
Right.
You know, so I'm a big fan of that book. Of course, there's a book by that, I mean, I know a lot of your audience does like track, might not be in the track and field, but the book is so fabulous. It's called J.K. Doherty's The Track and Field Omnibook. Of course, it was the first edition was what got me to go to Utah State. But it's in it. He's dead now. But the fourth edition, if you can find it at a library, just browse through it and look at track and fields, what track and field did way before anybody else did with weightlifting, plyometrics. Everything we talk about, track and field did it a long time ago. And here's why. Track and field is measured. Okay?
Right.
You have this groovy idea about doing negatives in the squat.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't throw farther, your groovy idea, I ain't doing.
Right.
But if I throw farther...
Quantifiable.
In 6 months, everyone in North America is going to do negatives because... And I'm telling you, that's how track and field works.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't... You have very little time to be on the wave.
Yeah.
And I tell you something, as a track coach, it's hard to stay on the wave in track and field.
Mm-hmm.
Because, man, every time you turn around, someone's doing something better.
Well, swimming is the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and why? Because it's quantifiable.
Yep.
Yeah. Did you throw farther?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Then it's not working, is it?
Nope. Yeah. How about videos? Because, you know, I mean, this is kind of the video age, and we're all into visuals, and some people learn better that way. So what's on?
Yeah, that's true. You know, I people send me, and I appreciate it. You know, like Pavel, I've watched a lot of Pavel's videos, and I've watched a lot of weightlifting videos, and you know, I was in a lot of videos back in the 90s, in the bigger, faster, stronger videos, the power clean and the upper body plyometric and some of the others. And, you know, I know that the younger generation likes them. I find them just one step from, I get so bored. I did like the, what's the video that CrossFit always recommends? Weightlifting. The heels only weightlifting video was good, but I tell you, I was ready to strangle people by the third hour of, you know, and now do it from the, you know.
Yeah.
I get bored faster than most people, you know. I have old man's disease.
Short attention span, huh?
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, Pavel has a couple videos on stretching that I think are really, really interesting. I mean, I think they're really remarkable to watch. Gosh, I'm trying to zip through my mental library here. Of course, once again, I'm going to tell you from the heart, I think the track and field videos are very good.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of your people get a lot from them. You know,
yeah.
I like Brian Oldfield's shot putting with the big O.
Mm.
One, it's very damn funny. And two, it gives you what you need. It's, okay, you want to be a good thrower? Okay, do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a, you know, crazy weightlifting stunts and people doing fun stuff. And,
right.
But, you know, that's what it takes,
Yeah. Do you find that videos or, you know, maybe DVDs, because you can control them a little more, the frame-by-frame thing, do you think it's helpful in Olympic lifting to have some videos of some Olympic lifting? And do you coach that way at all?
No. Now, I get it, though. I mean, I can see why someone would. And please, I'm not trying to be, oh, well, I already know it all, jeepers. You know, I'm Mr. Dan John, for God's sake. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, you know, I had some fantastic coaches. Dick Knottmeyer, you know, Jim Schmitz. I've trained with, you know, Mara Martinez, Ken Clark, oh, God, Kurt White, a whole bunch of people. I mean, very, very fine lifters.
Yeah.
Some European lifters and stuff. So I, to watch a video of somebody from, you know, someone's basement, you know, doing snatches, I'm not going to pick up much from, personally. And what can happen sometimes is, you know, especially the ones that cross-sell products, you really can get, you know, lost in what's important and what's not. You know, I do agree. I tell people this all the time, and I'm just telling you straight up, Dave. Best thing you do to become an Olympic lifter is do what I did. Mm-hmm. Go to an Olympic lifting meet. You can learn more. Sitting in the stand, sitting in this chair,
right?
Talking, asking questions. Where do you train? Would you mind? Would you show me this? Then you can. Yeah. And by the way, you'll find it's going to be free. It's going to be, well, San Jose. I mean, you've got thousands of great lifters down there.
Yeah.
It's going to be free. It's going to be entertaining. You know.
Yeah.
People are. Yeah.
Well, I'm up in Seattle now, so.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, okay, that's right. I just grew up in San Jose. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've got, even up in Seattle, you've got a pretty good group up there, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, so I get it. So it's well, I mean, obviously at some point you got to put your hand on the bar, but, you know, prior to that, kind of learning what it's all about, you're a bigger fan of actually being in the presence of people who are doing it.
Yeah, I got a good friend, Mike Rosenberg, who did it the other way. And I love Mike, and Mike, if he ever hears us, knows that's true. In fact, he wants his son to marry my daughter.
Well, there's an interesting little tidbit.
And he watched all the videos, he did all this stuff, and he tried to train himself at home.
Yeah.
Well, when he came to train with me in Ohio when I was out there visiting, he had analysis by paralysis. Mm. Because by watching what he saw on TV and going, I think this is what they're doing. And then it was hard for him. And then one day it all clicked. So it does work, but it depends on when you want your click moment, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the first time I snatched, 3 weeks later, I was on the platform for my first meet. The first time I saw a person snatch, I was on a platform 3 weeks later at a meet. You know, so for me, that's the way I like things.
Yep.
I mean, let's get, you know, because I think you learn more, you know, when you put it on the line. Than, you know, all the, you know, conversation.
Right, right. No, that's a good approach, and I think it's a more aggressive approach. I think your ramp up time is bound to be a lot shorter that way, I'm guessing.
Well, it's true. I mean, you're sitting there, you know, you got 4 days, and you're thinking, God, do I need a singlet?
Yeah.
You know, and you're ordered, like me, I ordered from York Barbell a singlet, you know.
Right.
It didn't come in time, of course. Weightlifting shoes. I had hand-me-downs, you know. God, it was just, you know. Yeah, that's just the way things, you know, I like that method.
Because sometimes we get there, we get to the same place by different methods, so.
And there's no question about that. And I think you're right. But with my idea of just jumping in and doing it and just kind of hanging on for dear life the first couple of months,
right.
You, when someone takes you aside and says, go left, you look at them and go, oh my God, you're right. You know, versus, you know, 1,000 technical deep, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Hey, I want to bring your throwing expertise into play here a little bit and ask you if you teach throwing as a part of general physical preparation, do you teach throwing to everybody, or is it only the people? Is it too specialized? Is it only people that want to throw?
No. The best way to teach, well, there's a wonderful game called Hoover Ball.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Do I need to say anything else?
Well, not to me.
Yeah, Hoover Ball teaches everything I want the general athlete to do in regards to throwing explosion. I'm working with a young man. He's 6'11". He's from Croatia. Okay, and we're trying to develop him into being a great basketball player. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Well, when he plays Hoover Ball, his eyes get different. His body changes. He becomes more aggressive. There is something about throwing a medicine ball in a competitive manner, 4 points, that brings out aspects of the athlete that really are sometimes untapped.
Now, for people that are listening to the archive of this, can you give the 20-second Hoover ball instruction?
Sure. Well, we play with a heavier Hoover ball. It's an 11-pound medicine ball. It's played on a volleyball court, and you toss the ball. It's very much like volleyball with a medicine ball.
Right.
If you go on the internet and look up, it's named after President Herbert Hoover, mm-hmm. Hoover ball. There's a national championships, there's associations, and they have the rules on the net. I would strongly recommend adapting the rules for your equipment and your level of player.
Right.
We play, I like singles, I like doubles. We play ping pong scoring versus, tennis scoring.
Right.
So we do change a few things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of the beauty of it, because everybody's got their own little variations on it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the home field advantage. Yeah.
So you find that Hoover ball is embodies most of the throwing skills that you have to train. Yeah.
All. Absolutely.
Cool.
I guess we come out and have them carry stones or throw stones and stuff, but to be honest, the big strong kid with the big bench is going to win that the first day, and mm-hmm. people are going to hide. Whereas in Hoover ball, there's not a lot of hiding.
Yeah.
So I know that's actually a lot shorter answer than you probably expect it, but it's the truth.
No, I think it's great.
Yeah.
Talk about Highland Games for a couple of minutes. What? How did that cross your radar the first time? And
well, that's funny. I was throwing the hammer and I really enjoyed it. I'm walking in the mall and I see that there's a Highland Games. Now there's an area of Salt Lake called Highland, and I thought it was a games at Highland, and they had the hammer throw. So I went up there and signed up. Registration was at 8:30. Of course, I didn't know that meant 9:30. And I said, I just want to throw a hammer. And the guy goes, oh, no, you want to throw every event. So I had never seen any of the events. And I'm in track. I have my discus throwing shoes, the hammer throwing shoes,
right.
Singlet, and, those little, fanny showing shorts.
Right.
And I start competing. Well, as a thrower, I dominate the open stone. I dominate the Bramer stone. Those are the rock throws.
Uh-huh.
We move on to the weight for distance, 56-pound weight for distance. And the guy says, you got to throw it with one hand. Shit, one hand? So I throw it sort of like a discus and sort of like a, who knows what I threw it like.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm winning event after event after event, and I've never seen the caber toss, and here I am throwing the dang, telephone pole. Boy, I win athlete of the day,
Yeah.
And I break all these
This
records.
Is your first event, your first time?
First time I'd ever seen the event.
Wow.
Now, that's not uncommon for track and field athletes to do really well in their first. The problem is we don't improve a ton. I mean, we learn, but when someone takes you aside and teaches the Highland style, you improve again. But you've thrown your whole life.
Right.
You don't really, you get how to throw things.
Right.
So I've been throwing. That was in 1983, and I've probably done, I'd say at the least number in a year is one, the most is probably 17. But I do a number every year. I don't take them as seriously as a lot of guys.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that any sport where I can be drinking scotch between rounds,
it's got to be a good thing.
It's got to be a good sport, yeah. So there are games I just get bombed. I mean, I'll be frank with you.
Yeah.
Your audience's ears can handle that. But I mean, I've been to some games where it's dangerous to hand me an implement.
They should not allow people in that condition to have heavy objects in their hands.
And some games I take more seriously. But, I truly enjoy the Highway Games. I like the culture. I like the festivities. I like the dancing that goes along with them. I like the other stuff. I really, it's funny. I've looked over the years, and I'm 48, and I started Highland Gaming when I was, what, 23? And my marks are still around the same. I haven't dropped.
Wow.
Which is kind of nice. I don't do drugs, you know, and I'm clean and all that stuff. And I think it's a real testament to, you know, if you choose to do things a certain way, you don't have these huge valleys and hills.
Right.
You know, and I feel very good about that. That here I am at age 48, and I would be very competitive with myself at age 29, mm-hmm. age 35, age 40, and age 48.
And I would expect you believe that'll continue for a while longer too. Huh?
Well, that's kind of the plan.
We're still testing that theory, huh?
Well, it's just a theory right now.
Let's go back just a minute to something you mentioned really early on in the conversation. This thing about the tranquil mind. That's all I wrote down here, but it intrigued me. I'm wondering if could you repeat that story about where that came from and what the significance of it is to you.
Well, it's Dick Notmeyer's idea that when you compete, you should be calm. And calm for me means that you need to laugh, you need to enjoy yourself. And that you can't be psyched up, as we used to think back in the day, back in the early days.
Yeah.
You can't talk to anybody on game day because you have to be psyched up.
Right.
Now, the funny thing is, I'd like to take my athletes aside in 2005 and say, by God, son, you gotta get game face on. They're on the other end now.
Yeah.
You know, they're having pizza eating contests right before the state meet, you know. the funny thing is that wasn't a joke.
Just a little too relaxed, huh?
Yeah. What tranquil mind meant to Dick is that you put the work in and now you're going to enjoy the performance.
And
you just can't let things bother you.
Yeah.
In fact, Dick was very good about teaching me. He would kind of, I don't know, I hate to say, push me to make things bother me. You know, we would joke around so much that it was hard to bring myself back to a Clayton jerk, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is, that's fine. You should enjoy your competition.
Mm-hmm.
And once I finally got a handle on it, I realized that I compete 1,000 times better when I'm social, when I'm caring about my competition, when I'm happy to be there. That's when I compete at my best, you know.
Yeah. And that makes sense to me, too. So much, and especially competitions that are, I mean, competitions probably by nature are at least to some extent skill-based. You gotta let that stuff flow at some point. You gotta rely on your instincts, you gotta rely on the work that you've done so that this has all become second nature. But you can mess that up, you know, by overthinking it.
Well, what I try to teach my athletes now as a coach is to have a single focus, and usually it's a pre-movement focus. Like in the discus, we use the word stomp, and that, for right-handed thrower, that's slapping the right foot full-footed on the ground. And it's funny because your concept at the state meet, as a freshman, I'll tell you, when you're a senior at the state meet, I want you to stomp your foot on the ground, and then try to pick it up as quick as you can once you start your throw. And I've had kids come back, state champions, and go, you know what's weird? All I got in the ring, and I couldn't remember anything else. I was so nervous, and I heard stomp.
Hmm.
And
became a mantra for them, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's before you even throw, they stomp their foot on the ground, they pick their foot back up, they threw their lifetime best on their first throw at the state meet in a rainstorm, and wow. State champions on their first throw.
Yeah.
And that's happened many times. Yeah. And it's the idea. I think the hard thing is to have a single focus.
Yeah.
You know, when you're at a weightlifting meet, you know, what is the single focus you're going to have? I mean, I tell you, my brain talk, sometimes it's like I'm filling up page after page after page of inner dialogue, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so how do I get myself back to a single focus? Hard thing about, you know, somebody like myself who does discus throwing, weight pentathlons, Olympic lifting, and Highland Games, is I often don't compete enough to have a single focus because, you know, I don't work on my single focus enough for one thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny, at the Nationals back here in August, you know, I threw an 8-meter PR in the javelin, which I was very excited about because my single focus was to run like Tigger. You know, Tigger?
Yeah.
Bouncy, 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 bouncy.
Yeah.
Well, I'm attacking, you know, here I am at the Nationals, and I'm attacking the foul line going bouncy, 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 bouncy. Well, it was great because, you know, it held me in check mentally and physically. And I'm telling you, I transferred everything I had into the javelin throw. I mean, it was one of the, you know, and I'm sure I'll get better in the javelin because, I've added, gosh, almost 60 feet in 2 years.
Yeah.
To the event because I've, you know, actually worked on it
right.
With the correct manner. So, you know, it's funny. It can be something like Tigger, bouncy, 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 or it could be stomp. But I think it's really important that you as an athlete have a single focus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever that's going to be.
What's in your mind as you get ready to lift in competition?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Want to know?
Yeah.
Are my socks the same height? Look, my shoelace, my last one. God, my toes hurt. I hate these shoes. God, I feel fat in this singlet. My hands hurt. Why do they have such rough bars? I have a billion thoughts going through my head.
Well, I'm thinking that each one of those things you just mentioned is sure a heck of a lot better than, God, I hope I don't, you know, blow it or embarrass myself or get all obsessed
about
it.
Blow my knee off, yeah.
Yeah, right. Because that's...
The best word I have in a weightlifting meet is slam, S-L-A-M, and I try to slam my feet on the ground in the snatch, the clean, and then in the jerk, I try to slam my left foot.
Yeah.
For some reason, if I can think of slapping or slamming my feet back on the ground, that aggressive concept seems to help a lot.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, you could use a different phrase. I know this, that your technique has to be there at a meet. I mean, I've done one meet, and this actually worked pretty good, is my word was heels, and all I did was just try to stay on my heels, push, push, push on my heels as long as I could. That actually worked good. I mean, I did go 6-for-6.
Yeah.
Set state records, so maybe I revisit.
Yeah, maybe you ought
to. As you mentioned that.
Be something to that.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think I've just got, there's just one more question I have for you tonight, and then I'm going to let you go. I want to remind everybody listening in tonight that our next CrossFit Live is coming up on November, oh my gosh, I just forgot the date. I think it's the 11th of November, and we're going to have Mike Rutherford from CrossFit Kansas City. Yeah.
Wow.
Rutman's going to be all next time around. So that'll be on November 11th, and just wanted to give everybody a little advance notice about that. Okay, and I would like you to finish up by talking about your Get Up publication.
Well, Get Up. Get Up is the world's finest free internet weightlifting newsletter devoted to weightlifting and discus throwing. In fact, there is no parallel. It started a couple of years ago. I won the National Masters weightlifting meet. The next week at the state meet, since I didn't snatch well at the meet, I decided to break the state record in the open state record in the snatch. And I had it overhead, and I screwed it up, and I ended up hitting the ground with my elbow with a weight on the bar and blowing my wrist into 8 pieces.
Yikes.
And I was in terrible pain for nearly... Well, gosh, we had a family thing a couple of months later with the cast off, and I was in so much pain I had to go to bed. I blew the pins off, the screws off, so I had 2 surgeries on my wrist, and it took me, 18 months to be able to hold on to a clean with my left hand.
Mm-hmm.
And about a month after I blew my wrist apart, I was sitting at my desk one day feeling sorry for myself, but I said, you know what? This community, weightlifting, discus throwing, track and field, Highland Games, has done so much for you, and you've done so little back. And I'm not, and I, please, if I sound like I'm exaggerating, you can call BS if you want, but my left hand was so messed up, it hurt to type anything. And that's when I started typing the first free GetUp. Hmm. And I just started punching it out, and I said, I owe the community. All my education has been for free. All my travels was free because of track and field. Yeah. And so I came up with the idea of GetUp. And it's funny, it was only until about literally a second ago I realized what the word GetUp means. You know, it's a phrase used in wrestling. Get up. Mm-hmm. It's a phrase used in football. Get up. It's a phrase you hear at weightlifting meets. Get up. Mm-hmm. But I think what it meant was me. I suddenly got an insight right there. That's kind of cool, Dave.
Glad I could
get
help.
Get up meant for me to get up. You know, here I was, and if you've ever had surgeries and stuff, they give you drugs that really depress you. And
yeah.
Tiff said that at night I would moan all night long. And I was in terrible pain. I couldn't sleep. And I know it must sound like I'm hyperbolic, but it's true. I mean, I was in a lot of pain.
Yep.
And I think get up represents for me, get back into it, you know?
Yeah.
Here you were, you know, you had done a lot of the great things. It's time to start a new career. And so we've had, and I mean, some amazing authors have put in. I mean, we've had people from all over the world write for us. A couple issues back, we had that guy who was in China. He was just this very nice British gentleman in China who was watching the national team lift, and he reported to us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for free? That's pretty good, you know. We've had, you know, Mike Stoltz, the 92 Olympic shot put champion, training partner, write what he and Mike used to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
People getting ready for the nationals, people in all kinds of sports, people attempting to do this or... here, you know, basically, it's, you know, I love anybody who tries to send in an article. We've had high school kids write in articles about what they learned doing certain things, you know, and so it's devoted to anybody who wants to write, who just needs to put it down on paper. We always say in track, you know, just show up. That's all I care about.
Right.
Well, it's like just write it down. Just write it down. That's all I want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what it's dedicated and devoted to.
How often do you have issues?
Well, it can be twice a month. It can be once a month. We've done it as many as three times a month. With my new job and my schedule, it's going to be once a month for at least a little while.
Yeah.
Because of I'm having problems with my. See, my old job, I had all this cool computer stuff, and now I'm back on my home computer. And,
yikes!
You know,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty scary. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, you know, and I got my daughters yelling at me, Dad, I went on the internet.
Check my email. Yeah.
You know, and so I got that going on. So it's generally, historically, it's once a month.
Yeah.
And and if you read enough get ups, you'll get it. Sometimes it's twice a month, and sometimes it's three times a month. Why? Because people send in a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We've had people, I mean, the nice thing is, I've had kids write, from high school kids, write stuff, 5, 6, 7 page articles that is as good as anything you're going to find anywhere on training.
Yeah, isn't that surprising when that happens? I've seen that myself, yeah.
They get it. And then I've had some very famous people write some stuff that, you know, is pretty good, but,
yeah.
You know, it's...
You expected better.
Yeah, well, you know, this idea that lifting weights makes you strong, I kind of think our audience knew that, but... And some of the stuff, you know, I don't know if people say, well, God, that doesn't seem to fit your fit. Heck, we're just putting it in there. We don't care if it fits my little beliefs or not.
Right.
You know, it's, right. You know, I mean, I've had some very complimentary things. I'm always a little uncomfortable with that when people write, thank you, Dan, John, for changing my life. Well,
yeah.
A lot of times I'll edit that out, and sometimes I'll leave it in. But, you know, it's a hard one for me, you know. Because I'm trying to, you know, I don't want to be like those other editors. This is for us as a community,
right.
You know, people who care about what we're trying to do here, you know.
Yeah.
You know, people are trying to give back or just trying to figure it out from it. You know, wherever you are in your journey, I want to be part of it. If I can help you, great. If you can help me, hey, that's even better, you know. But that's
right.
What GetUp's all about.
So how do people get their hands on these publications?
Oh my God, it's really tough.
They're in print, or you
subscriptions, and there's you get the pass. No, nothing. Just go to danjohn.org slash coach.
Right.
And then go to GetUp, and there's everyone we've ever had is all right. there, sitting there waiting for you.
Right.
All free, basically everything except for the DVD is free, I do.
Yeah.
I have a 97-page book on my site called From the Ground Up that'll walk you through a lot of stuff we talked about tonight. Not everything, because 6 months from now, I should know more than I do now. You know,
that's kind of the plan, isn't it?
Yeah. 6 months from now, I'll have something really interesting to tell you.
Well, we'll have to have you back in 6 months then.
Hey, anytime you want. I really enjoy this stuff.
Dan, it's been great to spend some time with you. I really
you have a
strange and wonderful mind, and I knew that already, but but it's been on display here for the last couple of hours, and it's been nice. We'll do this again sometime in the near future. And I want you to know that this is going to live on, you know, in an archive form, so you're likely to hear about this 5 years from now and forget completely about it. But five years from now, somebody's going to say, hey, I heard you on CrossFit Live. What? Yeah.
And if they want, my email address is dj84123@yahoo.com.
All right.
And I'm always there to help. I love this stuff. I hope it came across that I do. And I'd love to. Anybody has, you know, If you're serious and you're on the journey, hey, not only am I here to help you, but there's a lot of other people out there too, okay?
Right, right. Terrific. Dan, thank you so much. I'm going to let you go. Have a good night's sleep. I know you're big on sleep, so we're going to try and give you more of those hours before midnight.
And by the way, before we close, though,
yeah.
I said October 2nd is an important day in my life.
Yeah, and I saw the post from your brother about that.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say, you know, we forget our parents sometimes, and, you know, every day I look in the mirror and I see my mom and dad looking back at me, and I just, today's the 25th anniversary of her death, and she was a great old Irish lady, and I just wanted to, when we set this date up, I thought, my God, that's 25 years, and I can't believe it myself, but to be honest, there's no better way for me to have spent my time been with you tonight doing this. This would have made her very proud, okay?
All right.
Now you bet.
I think it's pretty cool that you did that, and it makes the night that much more special. So
you bet.
Thank you very much, Dan. You have a good night's sleep. Take care of yourself. We'll be in touch, and everybody in the CrossFit community appreciates the heck out of you.
Thank you.
So keep it up, and we'll be talking to you.
All right. Good night now.
Okay. Good night.
Bye-bye.
That's going to conclude this edition of CrossFit Live. Next month, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, the guest is Mike Rutherford, owner and coach extraordinaire from CrossFit Kansas City. And that'll be a good one. I do hope you'll be around for it. The date is November 13th. See, I had it written down here, so I should have checked my notes. November 13th is the date for the next CrossFit Live. I'll be looking for you there. And until then, this is Dave Young. Be well, be strong, and we'll see you next time on the next edition of CrossFit Live. Good night.
You've been listening to the CrossFit Live webcast from October 2nd, 2005, featuring strength coach Dan John on the subject of strength training. If you have comments or suggestions you'd like to contribute to CrossFit Live, please address those to host@crossfitlive.com. That's host@crossfitlive.com. For current information on CrossFit Live and the status of upcoming shows, please visit www.crossfitlive.com. We'll see you next time on another edition of CrossFit Live.